Sarah Perry is the author of The Essex Serpent, which was the British Book Awards Book of the Year in 2017. I have Sarah's beautiful books in front of me. After Me Comes the Flood, The Essex Serpent, and her new book Melmoth, which came out last month. Sarah, what a pleasure to have you with us.
Thank you very much for inviting me.
You've been on book tour with Melmoth. I was wondering, how's that going? Do you like being out and about?
It's an extraordinary privilege, actually, and something that I have to keep reminding myself what a privilege it is so as not to grow used to it. Because, of course, there was a time when nobody wanted to hear what I thought about the Gothic or matters of faith and redemption or, you know, narrative. And now they ask me all the time, and I'm sure there'll come a time when no one wants to hear anymore. So to have 2 months of going all over the place has been really amazing, actually. It's quite exhausting, mm-hmm. Sort of mentally and emotionally. I've got a habit of having people in the signing queue crying at me, and then I burst into tears, and then we have to have a hug, and then we have to do it all over again. So, but yeah, no, it's been great.
Tell us about Melmoth the Wanderer.
I quite often, when I'm doing events, say, hands up who's read Melmoth the Wanderer, just for the joy of seeing one very proud person fling up their hand in a room full of sort of 250 people. So it was published in 1820, and it was written by an impoverished Irish vicar called Charles Robert Maturin, who was as mad as a goose. He really was. He wore very, very fine clothes, but was so poor that he couldn't afford to eat. Loved dancing, but had a very deep and profound and quite angry social conscience. So he would give sermons where he told his parishioners that it was their fault that the Irish people were starving in the streets and that they'd better bloody well do something about it. And so he wrote to his friend Walter Scott and said, I'm going to write a novel that out-Herods all the Herods. So he wanted to write the most violent and depraved and upsetting novel that had ever been published. And he succeeded. So it's a very long book comprising the story of Melmoth, who has sold his soul to the devil for an extra 150 years on earth. But he soon realises this is a pretty bad bargain. So he travels all over the world trying to find people in a state of such desperate depravity and unhappiness that they'll change places with him. It's incredibly violent, it's incredibly bleak, it's very funny. It's a very angry satire on established religion, on kind of political corruption. And I was completely transfixed by it when I read it as a PhD student in my early 30s. And I remember getting halfway through thinking, one day I will write the modern version of Melmoth and I will make my Melmoth a woman. But I didn't do anything about it for a very long time because it was too intimidating a task.
Tell us about Helen Franklin.
I have a slightly cold relationship with my characters, which always really disappoints people because they're plot devices and they're constructs. They are not people who I experience upon waking, and they wander into my subconscious and I love them and I must walk with them on the way. You know, I make them up. They are there for me to explore certain things. And there's two things that were imperative about Helen. Helen Franklin is a very boring, very drab, ordinary Englishwoman in early middle years with absolutely nothing to recommend her, really. And this was really important because I'd written a very compelling and attractive heroine for The Essex Serpent. Cora. And I thought, you can't fall back on the same old tropes, woman. You know, try something else, stretch yourself a bit. It's easy to make a character interesting if they're funny and daring and infuriating and maddening and loving. But what about characters who are basically a bit drab and absent? So it was a challenge. But also, the book is about how the world is not divided into monsters and good people. You know, you can't tell by picking them out of a crowd the people who will be instrumental in terrible things. They're just as boring as I am and as everybody else is. So Helen has done something terrible, but you would never know by looking at her. And that was really important because, you know, in books, the people that do wicked things often have a widow's peak and a cape. And she's the opposite of that.
And a sort of a, you know, piercing stare.
Yes, that's right. Yes. Yeah.
And then Helen comes across, well, has the Hoffman document. Just tell us a little bit about Joseph.
This is the first document Helen Franklin reads that tells her about the legend of Melmoth, which she doesn't know. And in the the universe of my Melmoth, Melmoth is a woman who's cursed to wander the earth witnessing humanity at its worst. Everyone knows this fairy tale, but Helen's not heard of it before. Joseph Hoffman has been keeping this manuscript because when he was a child, he saw Melmoth when he was involved in something really terrible. And now, as a very, very old man writing in the National Library of the Czech Republic in Prague, he is writing his life account of what happened to him when he was a boy, where he saw Melmoth and why he believes that Melmoth has come back. So, of course, Helen first reads it and thinks, you know, this is the ramblings of an old man with a guilty conscience. But gradually her own guilt overwhelms her and she begins to think that Melmoth is real.
And that there are rustlings in the corner.
Yeah.
I really like books that contain books within them. And I was considering your three novels as a trio. After Me Comes the Flood starts with a diary. There are lots of letters in The Essex Serpent. And then, of course, part of Melmoth is documents. Is that a conscious choice on your part? Do you also like those books as a reader and then want to play around with it as a writer?
There's a strange thing as a writer where you do a number of things unconsciously to begin with, and then you reflect on your own practice and your own work, and then people write about your work, and you start to realise that that's what you're like. And then you start to do it consciously. So my favourite quote from the moment is by one of the towering literary titans of the 21st century, Dolly Parton, and she said, "Find out what you're like and do it on purpose," which is amazing. And so in After Me Comes the Flood, I unconsciously was drawn to fragments. I think partly because I have quite a low boredom threshold, and if as a writer you include fragments, then you get to play with voice, you get to break off the narrative and insert some tension, try another voice, and that's really good fun. And then subsequent to The Essex Serpent, I realised that people were talking about me as being sort of in the postmodern tradition, which of course plays around with the idea of fragments, documentation. This is real, but is it? Mm-hmm. Is that real? Which bit is fact? And so by the time I got to Melmoth, it was a mixture of glee and the knowledge that I'd found out what I was like and I was now doing it on purpose.
Which is good advice, I think, for writing and life, isn't
it? Yeah, absolutely.
Good old Dolly Parton. Your books are very different in setting and tone. Do you feel they have things in common, and are you aware that you have preoccupations as a writer?
I think I definitely see them as being one project, and actually one that has now concluded. So I see Melmoth as the last novel in a Gothic trilogy. All three books are linked by the Gothic sensation, playing with them in different ways, the psychological Gothic, the kind of noir Victorian Gothic, and then the monster supernatural Gothic in Melmoth. But there's also the fact that wherever I go, there I'll be, and I'm completely preoccupied with matters of faith versus reason, versus superstition, versus madness, with what it means to try and fail and try again and fail again and still find some form of redemption, some form of grace, with what it means to attempt to live a moral life, what that means, with kind of sexual politics and morality, friendship, intimacy, all of that stuff. So I do see this as being sort of a concluding book in a trilogy, but I know that whatever I do next, I'll carry forward all of these things that have preoccupied me since I was sort of a child, I suppose.
Do you learn about yourself by writing a book?
In my case, if I do, it's only with distance lending some sort of clarity to the view. When I walked in and saw the three books on the table, I involuntarily went, oh, I wrote three books. And I think it's because, you know, I was away on tour by the time Melmoth was published, and my feet have barely touched the ground. So to actually see three volumes together that I wrote for the first time really is quite extraordinary. And now looking at them on the table, I can see that, God, that is what I'm like, isn't it? Okay. Bit of a prig, actually. obsessed with the Gothic and always banging on about goodness. So I think I have found out what I'm like.
Did you write a bit of Melmoth in Prague? You certainly went to Prague to research it.
It depends what you call writing. I have a very strange writing method, which I recommend to nobody, which is that I get an idea for a book and then I don't write it in the sense of keyboard, you know, finger to keyboard, for a couple of years while it's going round and round my head. So I was very lucky to live in Prague as the UNESCO City of Literature Writer in Residence for 2 months in January and February 2016, so before The Essex Serpent came out. And I'd already conceived the idea of Melmoth, the broad ideas of who she was, that it would be a contemporary novel with historical documents. And I spent 2 months wandering around Prague in the snow, going to lots of opera and feeding the jackdaws on Charles Bridge and sort of looking for her. And then when I came to write it, those months were absolutely crucial.
You won the Nibby Book of the Year for The Essex Serpent, and that prize is designed to honour the work of everyone involved in the book. I was wondering if you enjoyed, as I do, parts of the publishing process, like things like cover design.
I absolutely see myself as being a team member, which sounds really lame and kind of Girl Scoutish, but the process of actually writing the book for me is utterly solitary. It's not shared with anybody until I've typed the end. Mm-hmm. Not that I actually type the end, but, you know, and then I go to my agent, she sees it. So I'm totally alone, spiritually and mentally and often kind of physically as well while I'm writing it. And then I enter into the world of the cover design, the typesetting, and I'm very lucky to have been with Serpent's Tale for 3 books, so I know the designer, I know he's an acknowledged genius, I know Ruthie, who will go over the copy with me, and we'll talk about semicolons. And so the Nibby was just, they won it with me. I think there's a lot of romance, slightly spurious romance around books, you know, the idea that the author is visited with this mysterious gift and somehow, probably by magic, a volume appears, but we mustn't discuss anything so vulgar as the cover price or the design. But it's not like that. There's loads of people with extraordinary expertise working away behind the scenes, so it was amazing to have it acknowledged like that.
The Observer said that Melmoth manages that rare feat of being hugely readable and profoundly important. Do you think about being readable? Is readability something you consider?
Yeah, I cannot imagine how one goes about writing a book that you're not particularly bothered about people reading. I mean, I would not spend 3 years cooking a meal that no one would want to eat, and I'm certainly not going to spend 3 years writing a book that nobody would want to read. And I find something very interesting about what's happened in the late 20th and early 21st century is if readability is ignoble, actually, and something that should come way, way down the list. You know, that self-expression should come first or something. Well, if I want to express myself, I'll go and play the piano badly. But this is a craft. I'm a crafts person and I want to make a piece of work that functions well. And I do think a great deal about the author writer's experience of pleasure and distress, actually. As someone who's been writing in the Gothic tradition, I want people to be really upset by Melmoth, and the more people tell me that they can't finish reading it, the more I feel job slightly done. Just try and get to the end. So yeah, I think about that a great deal. And I think also of that amazing anecdote about how obviously Dickens published his novels in serial form, and when he was publishing The Old Curiosity Shop and people wanted to know about Little Nell, what would happen to Little Nell, that there's an urban legend, which I believe is documented and true, that as the ship came in from America into Liverpool docks, people were leaning over the balustrade at the side while people were selling them the next instalment of The Old Curiosity Shop because they were desperate to find out what happened. Somewhere along the line, we've kind of conceived this mad idea that one either writes kind of interesting, challenging, worthwhile books or they're readable. And, I've always been greedy and I intend to try both with my writing.
Can I ask you what's next for you writing-wise?
To my great disgust, I seem to be writing a love story. I'm appalled. I don't read romance. I don't really believe in it. I don't like it. And yet here we are. So I think possibly it's a moving on from the Gothic in some ways. But how far I can escape the Gothic, I'm not sure. I suspect it'll follow me around like little jackdaw.
What do you like best about writing life?
My favourite place in the whole world is my desk. I would choose to be working alone at my desk above a party with everyone I love having a marvellous time. I just want to work, and that's by far the greatest pleasure for me. Just work, and as much of it as possible until I die. And then second to that, seeing readers and hearing them talk to me about the book. You know, when I was on tour, I met this couple of wonderful people for whom The Essex Serpent had been crucial in a really difficult time in their lives. After I wrote about pain and illness, I have a large number of people who speak to me about how they've never been able to articulate the effect of severe pain or long-term pain, and my essay was something that enabled them to show their family what they'd been through. And the idea that sitting at my desk in Norwich, I can affect people by making marks on a piece of paper seems to me astonishing. I can't believe how lucky I am.
Sarah Perry, thank you so much for letting your feet rest on the ground with us for this period of time. It's
been
highly enjoyable.
Thank you.